Good morning, everyone. This is Goa, and I'll be your engineer for the Thrive Together event today. I'm going to kick off with a couple of quick announcements, and then I'll be passing it off to Foster. So let's get started. First, just a reminder that you are being recorded today. We make these recordings available as archives for others, so please be mindful of that. Some reminders on how to participate today. If you'd like to participate in the live event, please use the Q&A panel to submit your questions or comments. And when we call on you, I'll promote you as a panelist and activate your camera. At that point, please click on the green video camera icon next to your name in the list of panelists, and then we can engage in your question and answer. We use chat to make comments, and if you'd like to share resources with the group, you can use that as well. If you have technical issues, please send an email to events@thrivemovement.com. Our team member Mitch will be handling those. And if you get your issue resolved, please also send him a quick email back saying that you did get it resolved. So that helps us with managing all of our tech issues. Also, a quick reminder that if you're using a mobile device today, the polls that will show up will probably not work for you. And again, that's just a mobile device issue that hasn't been fixed yet. Also, we have one small peculiarity for today. WebEx discovered a bug in the Windows system with the last update that Windows put out, which makes screen sharing unavailable for those people. So we're not going to be doing screen sharing today, but in case when you jumped into the room today, if your screen was black and you didn't see the infographic and the other posts for the screen share on my screen, then that was the reason why, and that's going to be patched tonight. So without any further ado, one other quick reminder, we are going to be asking you to raise your hand to respond today at a couple of different points. Foster will be engaging with you in that. So you can find your raise hand icon at the bottom left-hand corner of the panelist list. But until we ask you to raise your hand, please don't raise your hand. And if you accidentally do that, I see a couple of people popping up in there now, just go ahead and click that icon again, and that'll lower your hand, and then we can get started. Okay, great. So without further ado, I'll pass it over to Foster. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Goa, and welcome, everyone. I'm very excited about sharing this topic with our network. At our last event, we did one poll of what sectors people were particularly interested in and focusing their energy on transforming and so forth. And by far the most popular sector in that particular event was the spirituality sector. And it's kind of interesting to us, Kim. unknown and unknowable, or that human knowledge is limited to experience. And finally, other. So please check on whichever one of those ones of those apply to you, and then hit submit, and we'll take a look at who's here today.
I think the poll has to be reignited because it started ticking while you were reading, and now it looks like it's ended. On
okay.
Anyway, so whoever's managing.
It looks like people were clicking them off as I was reading.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so the results are up now.
Okay, good.
A pretty good response, so go ahead.
So, first of all, I want to just point out that when we get no answer, that usually means someone is on a mobile device because people on mobile devices can't do the polls, and unfortunately, this technology can't do that yet, so a lot of people don't get to answer the polls. So we're looking at the 43% answer spiritual, 27% mystic, 11% new age, 3% religious, 1% agnostic, and no atheist. Okay, well, thank you for doing that. And we'll have another poll later on, but for now, let's go back to setting some context for this discussion, because oftentimes people, when they're talking about this, don't stop to look at definitions or have a sense of the statistics. I want to move into the statistics for a moment. It's interesting how small a group we had identifying as religious in this particular network. But let me point out that, well, the last data that I was able to find on this was from 2010. But worldwide, more than 8 in 10 identify with a religious group. And this was from a study by the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life. And it said there are 5.8 billion religiously affiliated adults and children around the world, representing 84% of the world population of 6.9 billion at that time. So I want to keep going on religions for a minute, because it's really important that we recognize this phenomenon in the world. According to some estimates that I found, there are roughly 4,200 religions in the world right now. Virtually all of them, in my research, seem to have the notion that they are uniquely right in their beliefs. So it's a curious phenomenon at this particular period in time. Let's look at Christianity just as an example of one of the major religions. World Christianity currently is composed of over 33,000 distinct denominations in 238 countries. So there's just a phenomenon that I want us all to notice, that there's a very strong human tendency to be drawn toward some sort of recognition of, connection with, study of, practice of connection with with some sort of divine or bigger than us element. And there are many, many interpretations, to say the least. Another phenomenon that I noticed I think is really important to recognize is that the vast majority of the people who identify themselves as religious have the same religion that they were raised with in their family, in their community, in their particular section of the world. And a few examples of that in the Western world, over 90% of Protestants as adults were raised in that religion. 82% was Catholic and 86% Jewish. So there's a strong pattern in human behavior to tend to adhere to the religion, if you're going to be religious, that you were surrounded by growing up. One perspective that has really helped me, and you'll find this explained a little more in the main article that we have on our website under the spirituality sector, is called The Essence of Spirituality. And Goa, if you would put a link to that in the chat, that would be helpful. But I described there that a turning point for me was, you know, I have studied a lot of comparative religions. I've been blessed to travel around the world and visit many different churches and synagogues and mosques and temples and so forth, and experience the practice of many of those. And what I've found for myself helps the most is if I picture myself almost like an extraterrestrial coming down to Earth, and I don't happen to speak any of the languages, but as I'm flying around the planet, I'm noticing, happens to be a Saturday or a Sunday, so I'm noticing that there are many, many beautiful buildings, the churches and temples and mosques and synagogues and so forth that are beautiful architecture. And when I fly in with my spiritual body into these buildings, I just notice a lot of beauty. I notice a sense of extraordinary stillness and beautiful aromas and colored light oftentimes coming through the window. People are in reflection, or they're hugging each other, or they're experiencing community, they're involved in humanitarian projects. So I find a tremendous amount of powerful goodness in human beings as an extraterrestrial visiting these buildings. And it's particularly coherent until I start understanding the languages. And then all of a sudden I have to decide amongst all these different dogmas, you know, which one should I do and which one is right and all of that. And a lot of the confusion of religion, I think, begins with that dogma. And of course, throughout history, the church has led to a tremendous amount of destruction, really the second most after the notion of the state. And when you think of the suffering and the hatred and death that are associated with the words crusades and inquisitions, you know, witch hunts and heretics, burning at the stakes, Arabs versus Jews, Catholic versus Protestant, Hindus versus Muslims, Sunni versus Shia, and on and on and on. So obviously we've got a challenge here where so many people are drawn toward a particular practice, and at the same time so much violence has resulted. Now, of course, people have authentic experience when they're practicing their religion. In fact, there's a quote I found from Deepak Chopra that I find to be not a completely comprehensive but a useful distinction. He said, "Religion is believing in someone else's experience. Spirituality is having one's own experience." So, obviously, with all of the billions of people who are involved in religions, they're having what they might call religious experiences, what we might call spiritual experiences if you don't happen to be religious. And they're having a direct experience of the spirit realm that tends to lead on into seeking understanding, seeking teaching, seeking a practice to develop their awakening. And that religion is also at the same time oftentimes used to control people or to take their money and to impede their critical thinking. But I want to recognize at the same time that many spiritual groups do that as well. Spirituality is all too often being used these days to do the same. So a few more statistics on religion. In America alone, Americans are actually abandoning organized religion in droves. Data from the Public Religion Research Institute shows that while only 7% of Americans were raised outside a religious tradition, nearly 19% are religiously unaffiliated today. It's particularly strong in youth. One-third of Americans under the age of 30 say they have no religion currently. So in the poll, we looked at some definitions. I want to add in one more definition. Go and I happened to spend some time yesterday with a couple who were passing through Santa Cruz. And they're both very experienced and wonderful spiritual teachers. They're named Helen White Wolf, and her husband is Ramaji. And so I took the opportunity to ask them what would be their definition of spirituality. And they said actually they had worked on this in a bus they were traveling in for months, and come to a definition, not necessarily of spirituality, which is more of a static concept, but of what they call spiritual transformation or spiritual awakening. And I want to share what they shared with me, and I believe they're going to be on the call today, so hopefully we can get them to expound on this later on. But the definition that they come to, I found very intriguing, which was the spiritual awakening or transformation is the progressive and dynamic reunion of the human personality with the consciousness of the soul, and through that, with the heart of the presence itself. So obviously with words like personality and soul and presence, those are areas that we can explore. But I want to spend just a moment talking about my own personal experience of this. I personally was raised as a child in an Episcopalian church in Cincinnati, Ohio. And there was a mixed experience for me. I liked the singing. I liked the social life in what they called Sunday school. And also the guy who carried the cross in the procession wore these white gowns and carried this big gold cross and everything. He was like this big, handsome guy who was captain of the football team, and all the girls loved him and so forth. And I thought, wow, that is really cool to, you know, that guy has chosen to carry that cross and everything must mean something. So that helped keep me there for a while. But then I started asking questions in Sunday school that the teachers weren't comfortable with, about, you know, the walking on water and talking snakes and virgin births and that type of thing, that began to get me into trouble. But and then I moved on to really other disciplines for myself. Sports was a major discipline for me. Being in nature was. In college, I was introduced to Zen and sat with a Zen group for a while and had interactions with sessions with a famous Zen master from Los Angeles. And then I went on to self-hypnosis and yoga and Aikido, and really science became a major discipline for me that led me to spending time seeking out famous psychics and mystics and the whole channeling phenomenon. Then I moved from that into brainwave biofeedback, and also spent a bit of time studying at the Monroe Institute in Virginia, where they've been studying the altered states experiences scientifically for about 40 years now. All of those were vital in my own spiritual path. And it was interesting, one day when I was in my 20s, I was walking in San Francisco, and I walked past this beautiful big cathedral, and I just felt a real energy emanating from the building, and the door was open, so I walked up and went in. The whole place was full of people meditating with a yogi from India, Swami Sachidananda, who later became, mostly through his books, a mentor for me. But the one thing that I remember from that night, this was very near the end of the event that they were having, was he stood up and said to everyone, I really want you to pay attention to the fact that religions and spiritual disciplines can be wonderful cleansers, like soap in the shower. But don't forget to wash off the soap when you step out into life. So that stuck with me since that time. And some of the realizations that have been particularly important in what I would call my spiritual confidence, which is not a belief in some particular dogma that I got from someone else, but just my experience, are that the entire universe is alive, and that consciousness seems to be primary. And the question kept occurring to me, what if we have a body rather than being encased by one? You know, most of us would probably entertain the notion that rather than being a body having a spiritual experience, we're actually spiritual beings having a physical experience. So I think the last area that I want to share with you before passing the baton on to Kimberly is that what my own questing has led to primarily is that I am spirit itself. I believe that we all are, based on my personal experience, and that it's not something that we actually need to see. We don't need to seek our spirit. We actually need to remove the obstacles to discover the spirit that we already are. It's not something found out there. It's actually, you know, who is looking. And in my own path, when I look back on it, I really spent many years exploring how to integrate with my physical body, and then how to integrate with my emotional body, and how to integrate with my thinking in the mental realm, and then how to integrate with other people in interpersonal experience. And the better I got at each of those four realms, the more harmony I felt in life, the more love I experienced, and the more I experienced myself as spirit directly. When we were interviewing Emmett Miller for Thrive, one of the stories he told was a story of Gandhi's wife being asked by a reporter one day, "What is it that's so special about your husband?" And she responded very simply, "There's nothing special about my husband. He's like you and me and everyone else, except that through his practice, his thinking and his speaking and his acting have become one." So I personally have no interest in, through this call or anywhere in my life, coercing anyone into believing anything. I am, however, very motivated to help people learn to open their minds and learn to think for themselves and to be true to their direct experience combined with their reason and applied through an ethic of non-violation. I personally really relish honoring everyone's religion, spiritual beliefs, whatever, as long as they're doing no harm. So there are other personal stories that I could share that could illustrate some of how these realizations happen for me, but I think I don't want to take any more time right now. Maybe I'll have to take the opportunity to do that during the question and answer time. But for now, I just want to recognize that there are deeply religious, authentic beings. There are light workers, spiritual warriors all over the planet. And we are finding each other. There are many hoaxers, as there are in religions. There are in the so-called spiritual realms as well, as with channeling and mediumship and the new energy and so forth. There are hoaxers, and then there are people who are coming from their authentic experience. And so I want to remind us not to throw the baby out with the bathwater in seeking what's true for ourselves and what's authentic in other people's experience. There are dog whistles that you see dogs respond to that verify for us that they're phenomenon that we can't hear. There are infrared pictures of galaxies that show geometries that we can't see with our instruments or with our naked eyes. I've had a couple of experiences in my life of seeing the auras that mystics talk about around people's body that I can't see most of the time, that most people don't seem to be able to see at all, and yet that have verified for me that there are some people with clairvoyant capabilities. And all of these capabilities, for me, they represent what's innate in us and often untapped, but represent the future of what's possible for us. And that's why I particularly want to just explore all of this with an open mind to learn from one another today. So I'll leave it there and pass it on to Kimberly, please.
Thank you. This is my favorite topic. And so I'm really looking forward to engaging with you all live. I just wanted to say, I like it all in stories because I'm so fascinated. I mean, my relationship to spirituality is vast. One distinction for me is the difference between those peak experiences where there's a revelation and the daily practice that then helps to maintain that kind of peak experience revelation. And I think there are lots of ways, I think, that there are sort of miraculous, spontaneous peak experiences. I think that psychedelic and entheogens can sometimes help create that. I think there are a lot of ways to get there. And for me, it's been a way to sort of set the where I aim to be all the time, not because I am there all the time, but because it's just a marker of what I know is true. I know it's true all the time, whether I'm in sync with that all the time. And I just wanted to tell one story that was super impactful for me and that's informed a lot of what continues to this day with Thrive, which was in the 90s, I first learned about there being homeless teens in my community. There were, you know, kids over 18, not part of foster care, away from their parents. There was actually no legal place for them to sleep. And at the same time, I knew that women's shelters often didn't allow boys over 16, so that women would be forced to choose between taking care of their teenage boys, ending up on the streets, or having protection and letting the boys have to fend for themselves. So anyway, it was complex and not good, and I thought, you know, I'm going to help remedy that, and I'm capable of the organizing and fundraising and whatever would be needed to come up with something. So I did. I did what was needed and located a facility and was putting together this very comprehensive program in California. So the idea was it would be, you know, shelter, long-term housing, drug treatment, anger management, money management, spiritual support, counseling, school, the whole thing. And everyone in the community thought it was great, excepting that nobody wanted it in their neighborhood. So I finally found a facility, and the neighbors organized, and they hired an attorney to stop this from happening. So I kept getting pulled into a bunch of legal proceedings. And one day it got really hostile. Somebody slashed the tires on my car, and I got some threatening calls to my home. And it was the first time I had been the target of that kind of controversial energy. I was an anti-war activist in the 60s, but I'd never really been personally in it like that. And it was very disquieting. And I was out in my garden that evening, and I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, I wonder if this is just like me willfully trying to do something that isn't meant to happen, that I'm imposing, or is this actually, you know, part of a deeper cosmic will that I'm plugging into? Because if it is, then I'll be with it. But I just prayed. I put down my hose and I said, please, universe, just give me a sign and let me know if this is a part of a bigger impulse that I can be an instrument for, or if this is just my will. And I decided to go out looking, and I really wanted a sign, and I imagined that it would come from the kids on the streets who I knew where they were. And I went for this long walk down by the jetty, through town, all over the place. Nothing was happening. There was no engagement, nothing that happened that I experienced as a sign. And I got a few miles into it, and I was standing at the town clock, kind of trying to decide which route to take home, feeling very humble and kind of confused. And in that moment, these three teenagers came up to me from behind and said, excuse me, ma'am, do you know where there's a shelter in town? And it really changed everything for me. I mean, it was a moment of grace for me. I said, no, I don't, there isn't one, but how about if I take you out to dinner and we talk about what it is you'd be looking for? And it was actually in that night that we ended up designing what became the most successful voluntary program in the country for homeless teens. But that experience has informed and been a part of me ever since, because what I realized is it took away all doubt. It didn't matter how many more legal proceedings I was pulled into. It didn't matter what obstacles there were. I had no doubt that this was going to happen and that I was part of something that was bigger. And getting to that again, what it means to actually live without the doubt and to feel so accompanied by the cosmos, or however you want to describe it, is something that I have a daily practice that I do to try to help me stay in alignment with that. And so I'm happy to say that it has. You know, I just got back last night from Los Angeles, and I was saying to Foster that it's such a funny personal spiritual blend that I have. I'm a super strategist. You know, when we talk about how are we going to get these new energy technologies and healing modalities and great innovations that everyone on this call recognizes are there and ready to and needed all over the planet, you know, I go to what's the corporate structure that we're going to need and what are the tax ramifications and how can we do this legally and transparently and still protect the identities of the people who are doing these inventions and how much is it going to cost and how long is it going to take. So I was actually in LA. One of the things I was doing was visiting with an international tax expert because we're working on this, developing the infrastructure that's really going to bring this stuff out in a protected way. So I'm driving through LA traffic, which I find kind of nerve-wracking in general, having this dialogue the whole time with the same spirit guides that I prayed to that night in the garden to say, give me a sign. And the conversation was, you know, here I am doing my human part. I'm going to drive through the traffic. I'm going to show up and describe this as well as I can and get the best kind of earthly human infrastructure advice that I can get in order to pull off what I think of as really a spiritually induced impulse in me, which is in recognizing our oneness. I want us all to be able to thrive, and toward that end, I believe that people not being distracted with daily survival needs is going to be a big boost toward that happening. So here I am still in this integration of my daily actions and activism being aligned with, inspired by, and reinforced always from a spiritual context. And I can listen to those stories in other people's lives forever. I'm really interested in how the daily practice informs the peak experience, how the peak experience informs the daily practice. So I would love to hear from you. We would love to hear from you. If you can describe an experience succinctly that you've had that helped clarify the nature of your spirituality, I think that's really helpful for us all to hear and how that informs your understanding of how we can all move from here to a thriving world. So go if you can open it up for the questions, and I will tune into what some of those are.
While we're waiting for some more questions to come into the Q&A, and again, we encourage people to do that if you'd like to share, I'll take a moment and just share another kind of perspective and part of my own spirituality. And it's kind of looking at it from the other side, in that, you know, often we have a life experience, a crisis, we kind of hit a wall, and we kind of feel out of resources and sort of reach out to the unseen as a last resort. And that's, you know, going through my own personal challenges, that's something that I absolutely do. You know, when you have no other resources, you hit your knees. But there's another perspective which comes at it from the aspect of creativity. And I think there's a very interesting link between imagination and intuition and the inspiration process, which sort of talks about that, the interface with spirituality as well. So in my own experience, I play the didgeridoo. And as some of you know, that's an ancient Aboriginal instrument from Australia. And as part of my practice, I started with my own imagination. When I would sit down and actually just, you know, practice the dij, I would imagine that I was actually sitting with a group of Aboriginals in the outback. And it started out as kind of an imagination, but what was really trippy for me is that it started to become a very real experience. And with, you know, practicing that and having that process over and over again, I really came to believe that I was tuning in with folks that were digging in Australia, and we were really jamming together. And I can't express that, you know, anything other than just, you know, sharing that this is what I believe happened to me. But again, it shows where if you start to imagine, you know, the imagination really opens up a connection with spirit, and inspiration can flow, and that can really open up spiritual pathways for yourself. So I wanted to share that.
Thanks for sharing that, Goa. And I'm thinking maybe we should go. Some people have their hands raised. We had suggested that before, and since Kimberly posed a question, I wonder if we ought to just call on someone who has their hands raised.
Yeah, and we have Bob O'Connor has a question. So if you want to pull him up.
Well, Kimberly, you had just asked a question, so I wonder if we ought to let people respond to that before moving on to a different question.
Okay. All right, I see a hand up with Bill and Jana.
Who should we start with?
How about Jana and then Bill?
Jana, I'm not seeing the list. That's odd.
On the attendees?
Yeah, let's start with Bill Wise. I'll promote him. And Bill, you're unmuted. I'll get your camera going. Go ahead and click on the green icon next to your name in the panelist list, and you can get your video going. Bill, can you hear us? Nope, doesn't sound like we're getting Bill's audio, fortunately.
It'd be great if everyone could take this opportunity to find the panelist list and see where the icon for your microphone and camera are, so when you come on, we can just invite you to come in with your sound and with your voice and your picture.
Okay, looks like we're not going to get Bill, so sorry about that, Bill.
And on the Bob O'Connor, he says he just wanted me to finish the LA story, which I'll do.
Okay. Who should we bring up next?
Elizabeth or Jana? Can you see those?
Sure, Elizabeth.
And Denise.
Elizabeth, can you hear us?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I just want to thank you guys. I just can't tell you how valuable this is to me to have a connection on so many different levels, integrating all of these things that we're understanding, and just your openness, your vulnerability, your commitment and determination. It's just been thrilling for me.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Pastor and Kimberly and God. My parents got divorced when I was about 30, and I ended up traveling around the world and saying, God, if you're out there, if you're a God of love, who are you? And I literally felt picked up, taken around the world, all the temples, the, you know, pagodas, the Buddhas, the Himalayas, and each country I went to, I saw a different quality of God, whether it was Japan and respect, or India and diversity, China, the friendliness. And this was in the 80s, but I just was so amazed at just being allowed sort of a grace being carried through this. And this world, and I ended up, I could have been anywhere, but I said, God, if you're God of love, I want to see you in families, parents relating to their children. I want to see you in the relationships between husbands and wives. I want to see you in how you treat your environment. And again, I ended up in Norway, and I felt so directed there, and it just so happened that I saw those qualities, and I saw it as a people that were so conscious of those things. So it was the consciousness. Nevertheless, I was surrounded by Christians in a small landscape architectural school, and they were all praying me into the faith, and I had just literally a transfiguration. Nevertheless, I also had, so for about 30 years, I was in a conventional, very conservative Christian faith. Nevertheless, I ended up marrying a guy who was just abusive towards me, and I had to leave that relationship because of my free agency. And I was in a, I what I'm understanding is that not only do we look externally to others, but we have to have that free agency inside of ourselves. We have to know that inner guidance and that inner voice, that intuition that goes talking about imagination, emotions, the programming, reprogrammed, the understanding of how our memory is working in our autonomic nervous system, and looking at that as a channel for how we connect our spiritual practice with our lives, integrating what it is that we're being called to. And I just want to thank you again, all of just for this connection, and I look forward to further connecting with you in some way. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Elizabeth.
Thank
and
you.
I think it'll probably be a theme as we proceed. I was struck in your story, Elizabeth, how you started with during a time of tribulation, you really asked. You asked the universe, and then you got a strong response. And that certainly has been how I've gotten most of my big inner guidance as well. And I invite other people to share that. I think sometimes that's the stepping off point between religion and spirituality. As we all quit, oftentimes people obviously grow up in religions and they're told this and that. But when you actually ultimately end up really sincerely asking the universe
yes.
for guidance or a sign or whatever, it's remarkable to see how profoundly the universe tends to respond, just as with Kimberly's story.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being succinct, because we have a lot of people who we want to be hearing from. So I appreciate that if when you all share, you do it as meaningfully and succinctly as you can.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
I'll bring you back down now.
So let's see, we had, did you find, is, oh, Jana's not raising her hand anymore. All right. Geez, there are a lot of you. Do you have one to pick out, or should I name someone?
Oh, please let me know who you think would be next. I think Melissa Penn and Melody Toon also have questions.
Okay. Let's do Steve, Antal, and Melody. Oh, I think Melody's on the phone, but I think we can do that, and then we'll
keep going. Can start with Steve. Steve's dialing in from the phone, so we won't be able to do video for him, but I've got him active. Steve can hear us.
This is Steve. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. I want to thank you and Kimberly Foster for what you two are doing, your commitment. I think this is a great place to associate, and I want to thank you. I've had so many experiences. I'm trying to pick one of them. One of them was when I was back in Akron, Ohio. I was working at a department store, and I had a friend of mine said, let's go to California. And I was working at the department store, and I just dropped everything I was doing. There was just this guidance had said, or whether it was guidance or whatever it was, I just dropped what I was doing. I said, okay, and I went in, I gave my notice, I took my money out of the credit union, and then the next day he came to me and said, look, I was just joking. And I had already committed, I had already given my notice, and for whatever reason, I had no bus fare, I had no plane, I had nothing scheduled, and I was going to go anyway. And the day before I went, for some reason, I went to the laundromat, and there was a couple there arguing about going to California. So I said, I mean, what are the odds? I had a washer and dryer at home. For some reason, I went to a laundromat, and they're arguing about going to California, and I said, well, where in California are you going? I can't help. But hear where you're going. They said to Los Angeles. I was going to Los Angeles. I was going to Hollywood. I don't know why, but the day before I saw this sign that said Hollywood, I guess I was just supposed to go. So this couple takes me to Hollywood and Long Beach. I mean, they took me to Los Angeles. I had a ride all the way through. Got to Long Beach, and I never had my shoe shine. I was having my shoe shine. I only had a few dollars left, and I hear somebody call out, Steve. I mean, I'm 3,000 miles away from home. But one event led to another. It was just guidance all the way. I mean, there's been many like that, that if you just listen, ask and you shall receive. I mean, it works. Mm-hmm. So thanks, you guys. I mean, there was many of you, but thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
Before we go to Melody, I'm just going to say something. I'll finish this LA story because I think it informs this whole thing. It's actually part of a bigger context in which, so part of this very strategic part of me has made it that in my daily practice, I really asked that when I was shown something, I would be shown in a particular way, not through my head, but through my body. And that it would happen that I would feel a kind of a nectar through my chakras, or that I would get teary in an unexpected time. That's what I asked for, just because I said I need something that's going to get my attention out of my daily busy mental world. And so a while after Thrive came out, and Foster and I were hearing from so many inventors and innovators from all over the world, but you know, we kept saying, gosh, we're so encouraged because we're the ones hearing from all these people. And we knew that was a unique opportunity. And we also knew that not everybody's, you know, innovation was what they thought it was or what they said it was. And we, and you know, Foster had the background in science and had connections with people from traditional education who could validate whether or not these technologies were what they were purported to be and held the promise that they did. Goa, who was this whiz with systems, was able to create an encrypted database for us to kind of start to put all this stuff together to actually vet these projects. We went out, and so Foster and I decided that we would create, we sort of said, well, what's next best use of us in our commitment here? And we both just got it was to do something with all of this, all of these solutions that were coming our way, to really look to see how most to empower the most leveraged, revolutionary things that we could with the information and understanding that we have. So here we are, like, just guided to bring in this vetting team and start creating this database and get business plans and budgets together. And I'm starting to think about what's the corporate structure that's needed and all this research and the tax ramifications. I mean, like a plumbing system, a global plumbing system with a lot of variables, as everyone on this call would know, because these aren't things that, you know, the government is excited to have out. And now we're talking about having to move huge amounts of money, some from international and all over, to projects that are internationally located. And this is a very complicated legal thing to do. But the guidance that came for us to do it and the things that kept showing up, like the fact that Goa was our computer, you know, craft, if he's the one who designed all that and executed with Foster, all that you see there of the visuals in the movie, that he also is a systems expert who can develop the encrypted database that we need in order to pull off Thrive Connect. I mean, the people and the clarity around what we were supposed to be doing has just continued to show up. And I have been continually guided by these feelings showing up. And sometimes it is teariness and weird times, and I ask for it. So if that happens in the middle of a meeting, I just kind of take it that I'm having that feedback. And the meeting in LA is that I learned a lot more about what's needed and am taking the next steps now to do that. So my own personal commitment is that I'm committing my life to developing the infrastructure and successfully doing everything I can to get these innovations out across the world in a way that is safe and legal and transparent and effective. So, and that's what this, so the meeting, it was a good meeting. I learned a bunch. I also, it was neat because it was consistent information that I had already received, which is always helpful when you get the same story from different experts. Anyway, that's the end of that LA visit story, but I just wanted to say it's part of a much bigger feeling of guidance that we have to take this next step in creating Thrive Connect and in heeding the signs that are coming our way to keep on encouraging us to do that. So, all right, Melody.
So Melody's also joining us via the phone, so we're not going to be able to get her camera up, but Melody, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Melody.
Yeah.
Hi. Nice to have you back, Kimberly. Your energy was missed last week, or the last month.
Yeah, thank you.
And so that brings me into my comment, because I consider myself an energy intuit, and so I read people's energies, I feel people's energies, and when I was very young, how I tuned into that was I was a fairly social person, but every now and again I would be in a social situation where I'd feel really uncomfortable, and I started putting the pieces together that it wasn't me that was uncomfortable, it was somebody around me. And once I was able to tune into that and understand that, then I was able to work with it. And so another practice that I do, because I do feel energy so strongly, is when I leave a situation, good or bad, I have to disconnect from the energy so that I don't carry it with me. And I just think that's a really good practice that people don't understand and would be good to understand that.
I think that's a really important point that I'm glad that you brought up. You know, there's a lot of people who don't even believe in anything that's not physical and measurable, and that's fine. They can believe in whatever they want. Meanwhile, if those things are going on, then learning the skills to manage them are absolutely critical. And some of my most important teachers in my life have been the people who are really skilled energetically, who taught me not only how to open up to other energy realms beyond the physical, but especially how to close down those realms when it was too much or when it was overwhelming or when I simply wanted to move my attention onto something else, because there's a lot of people suffering and in institutions and so forth who opened up to alternate realities but didn't have the skills to cope effectively. So thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah,
I want to echo that too, but sorry.
And I really think it brings you into more of a present moment when you're able to do that as well, because when you carry that energy with you, it's hard to really focus on the present moment. So
yeah,
absolutely. I wanted to echo that too. I've studied human design a little bit, and that's a phenomenon for me. I absolutely feel everybody else's feelings and emotions. And when I got an understanding of that, boy, a lot of levity returned to my life for sure. And I wanted to introduce I've heard this described as energetic hygiene, and I think it's a really beautiful term that really kind of brought this to my perspective as well, and definitely an important part of the spiritual process and integral. So thank you, Molly, for sure.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and I think it's related to something also, which is I find sometimes people have a tendency, I think, to kind of give up their humanness as if the spirit is superior, and that's not my personal orientation and belief is that I'm a really important part of the equation of the manifestation of light on this planet, that being human is an opportunity to bring emotion and personality and skills and all that is uniquely me here, and the healing that I accomplish, to bring that, the spiritual impulse or clarity or whatever it is that I'm able to pick up and move through, to add it to my own discernment and to not just abdicate my humanness in the process. And I feel like as a result, I just have such a delightful relationship with my spirit guides. Like sometimes I'll say, oh, you know, I'm not sure if you've been on Earth before, but I want to remind you of some of the stuff that happens here in this constricted time-space reality. And then I'll get something from, you know, in an impulse that reminds me of what it is to not be constricted by that. And it's that dance that I find to be so empowering and so exciting, and that allows me to really develop myself as part of my overall spiritual development. So I think it goes, I think it's all involved.
Anyway. Kimberly, I'd like to make a request as to where we go next, which is that that we bring up Helen and Ramaji. I think it's a particularly pertinent time. I mentioned them before and their definition of spiritual transformation, which I would love to for them to talk about. And we were just talking about the presence. Melody was just talking about the, you know, coming into the actual presence, and that's what that definition ended with. And I was also inspired to bring them up when Steve was talking about how he just all of a sudden dropped everything and went to the laundromat. These are two people, as I got to know them yesterday, who have been willing to, in a sense, drop everything from a traditional 3D reality point of view, to respond to their inner guidance in a way that, as most people know, can be very difficult, really challenging. A lot of people think you're crazy when you're responding to stuff. You know, what's your imaginary friend saying today? But these people have been doing it long enough to be incredible examples of the clarity that it leads to, and ultimately to the healing and empowerment of other people. So if you are there, Helen and Ramaji, and if you can get your webcam on, we would love to have you join us.
Just apologize for her bad.
What do I need to do now?
So Helen, in the panelist list, next to your name, there should be a green icon of a camera. Click on that, and that'll get your camera going.
Do you see the panelist list?
Yeah, to get online. So okay. I think we're
just
good now.
Ask if they've got sound.
Have you got
We've
sound?
Got, we can hear you great.
We can hear you fine.
Really good. So we're endeavouring to get the camera online now. We're calling in from a hotel room, and we have sort of limited internet access and technology here at the moment, so I apologise for that.
There we go.
Hi, everybody. We're organising lighting as well because we have very limited lighting here.
All right, thank you.
In Boston. Hi, Kimberly. Hi, Goa. And hi, everyone on the call today. So we're in Santa Cruz at the moment for a couple more days before heading back to New Zealand, and we had a lovely meeting with Foster yesterday in Goa, talking about spirituality and about the process of human awakening and what it involves. And I want to thank you, Kimberly, for sharing so deeply and so intimately about your personal experiences and your humanness in that, because I think one of the stumbling blocks at the moment for many people is approaching their spirituality from the point of view of trying to get rid of the personality, or trying to use will to get through the human condition rather than really loving the human condition. So I want to share a personal experience that I had way back in my early 20s when I was training as a spiritual healer in Australia. And at that time, my life was really, really challenging. My marriage had broken up. I was a single mother with a young daughter who was just a toddler. I had no money. I was in intensive spiritual training, and I reached a point where my health broke down almost completely. And I remember one day I was lying on a mattress in a very damp room that I'd managed to rent in the house of some friends. I had no money. I was in so much pain physically, I couldn't move. My back was out. I had a high fever. I couldn't even take care of my daughter. I was in such a state, I had no reserves left. And I began to pray. And I prayed with my whole heart, my whole being, and I prayed to the Divine Mother. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't carry my daughter, carry myself, create a life, serve the healing of humanity, serve the world in the way that I want to do. I can't even get up off the bed anymore. I was crying. I really had nothing left but this prayer in my heart. And I fell asleep. And the next morning, the phone rang. And one of my flatmates answered it. And she came in and she said, with this very sort of surprised look on her face, Annie's coming to get you. And Annie was one of the senior teachers in the organisation that I was training with. And she said, she's coming to get you. And I had no idea what was going on. But literally this wonderful woman picked me up and my daughter and our two suitcases, because that was all we had in the world, was our two suitcases, and took us to her house and nursed me back to health and took care of my daughter. And if that wasn't a response from the Divine Mother, I don't know what was, because I needed a really physical response at that moment. You know, nothing fluffy and ethereal would have done. And it wasn't long, it really wasn't long after that that I really rededicated myself back to my spiritual path at a deep level inside myself. I'd been doing all the outer actions that I needed to do in my training, but I think I was losing faith. So I rededicated myself at that time, and it was only a matter of weeks before I had a Christ consciousness experience. Wow. Totally unexpected, out of nowhere, a complete dissolution into the golden light of the Christ consciousness, where I was taken into the heart of the atom and shown the rising fire of consciousness that was moving through all of creation. And I was told that the enlightenment of all beings is inevitable.
Thank you for sharing that. Ramaji, I know that you're someone who has really listened to your inner guidance and stepped out in uncomfortable ways from circumstances. Could you hear what I was saying?
Yes, yes.
I was just saying that I know you're someone who's had to make difficult decisions stepping out of particular jobs and social situations and so forth to follow your inner guidance. Can you share an experience that helped clarify your own spirituality?
I've had many experiences. I'm just trying to pluck one that would be appropriate for this call. I've had a very, very close connection with my inner teachers, and after many, many years of practice of yoga and meditation, I had a very, very deep experience on the inner levels with my teacher from the Himalayas, the Master Babaji, and he asked me to basically leave the life that I was living and help the process of healing the planet. At the time, it was right outside my comfort zone, completely outside my comfort zone on every level. Like, I thought I was going crazy. It took me 1.5 years, a trip to India, to actually make that physical move. And I did it only on the faith that the Master knew better than I did, because I had no idea. And it's taken, that was in 1996, I've only really, really integrated and been able to walk that path in the last few years. Mm. And I have been on this journey since 1995.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And Ramaji and Helen are leading workshops now that are just deeply impacting the lives of so many people all over the world. And they're in the process of moving into a virtual capacity as well, in addition to what happens with the being in their presence individually. But it's very deep soul healing that they're doing. And before we let go, we need to go on to some other folks. But before we do, I would love if you would talk for a moment about how the definition that you came up with of spiritual transformation is how it informs the work that you're doing so impactfully on soul healing, where you talk about the spiritual awakening being the progressive and dynamic reunion of the human personality with the consciousness of the soul and through that with the heart of the presence itself. Could you talk about the presence itself and how this operates in the healing that you're empowering people with?
To really speak about the presence, you have to first explore the world of the soul. So I'll talk a bit about that first. The soul is the true individualization of the self at a cosmic level. So you could see it as the world that exists between the world of the absolute and undifferentiated and the world of the human personality, the world of the human energy field. And I would describe the soul as a vast consciousness of love that exists beyond space, matter, and time. And our whole personality and energy field and life process is a vessel of experience for the soul. So that if we were to track back our sense of self, the observer, the sense of I amness that we have as a human being, we would find ourselves back in that vast consciousness of the soul. And then from that place, moving more and more deeply back into the center of existence, into the heart of existence, we would find ourselves back in the presence where there is no movement of time. So all those planes are true and real. And the paradox that we face as human beings processing that information is that all those worlds coexist simultaneously. They're all equally true and real, but they all function differently. They all function according to different laws, and time moves differently on each of those dimensions. So the real shift that humanity is facing now, and the phase that we're now entering, is the movement from the perception of self as the personality, the brain, the biology, and even the energy field, to the experience of ourselves fully as soul consciousness in incarnation. So what you were saying before, Kimberly, about the human personality and the human aspect of this experience being just as important, being essential, is so true. We are here to express soul consciousness, to express presence in the 12 dimensions of space, matter, and time. And in that, every moment of experience, every moment of emotion, thought, feeling, visceral experience has value. In fact, it's the substance from which qualities of consciousness are born, cosmic qualities of love that are being birthed into the universe. And here on Earth, because we go through so much suffering and struggle and we individualize so deeply, we have so much diversity here, the qualities of love that are being born here are unlike any that have been created anywhere else in the universe.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I was really reminded as you were talking about the relationship of the soul and the infinite cosmos of the what Kimberly calls distinct and unified, and we symbolized a lot in the illustrations that Goa did in Thrive with the Taurus embedded in the, you know, in the holarchy. And that's one of the ways that I learned yesterday that you connected with us is through recognizing the imagery that you're so familiar with from your own exploration. So thanks for joining us and sharing this. And let me plug your book while you're on here. Helen has written a book called The Ark of Consciousness, A Dialogue with the Angel of the Earth, which I just started reading yesterday and I'm enjoying if anybody wants to check it out.
And also, and I, Michael asked, you know, one of the things we put in talking about this event is what grace, reason, and purpose have to do with our sense of belonging, radiance, and joy. And to me, this is it. It's this whole distinct and unified, how to have a clear sense of ourselves, personality, skills, history, experience, the whole quirkiness, you know, all of that within a vast consciousness that is eternal and so full of grace. It's like I think in terms of evolving of a soul, so my belief is that I'm this eternal soul evolving, and that I've come into this, you know, constricted human reality in time and space as an experience that will help my soul evolve, and that wherever I leave off here is where I will pick up on many other realms. So there's no lost effort. If I don't achieve some particular goal, the process of my development in my commitment to that goal all counts. I'm always evolving. And to me, what purpose and grace and all of this have to do with each other has a lot to do with courage. And a lot to do the courage is because the clarity that I have and the comfort that I have, that it's really, I'm absolutely committed, and at the same time, it's all okay. Like, I am personally attached to this planet and human life. I love human beings. I love this planet. I really want us to survive. I don't feel equally groovy about us not making it. I just don't. I understand that might be what happens, and I'm still, no matter what I think the odds are in any given moment, I'm very clear that my purpose is to evolve my consciousness in alignment with the greatest flourishing imaginable of humanity and the planet. So it's a way to kind of feel held by this okayness, this vast okay, it's all okay, while having a particular vision and mission and strategy and all the rest. And I know, you know, my insecurity personally was that I'm so practical, and I'm the one when someone has an idea who thinks, all right, what's it going to take to accomplish that idea? You know, in what kind of people, what kind of money, what kind of timeline? Like, that's, I am oriented in that way. And I used to think, ugh, it's just so practical. And I would hear these people who just had this kind of more explicitly cosmic orientation, and I thought that maybe I just wasn't cosmic enough. I was somehow so earthly. And until I really saw that is half of the picture, was bringing this into my spiritual experience and knowing that I am a spiritual being first, and that this human experience is born out of that, gave me the confidence to be my whole self with my personality and my skill set, and to really value it and to think, how many people who want these new innovations to come to life happen to be oriented into what kind of corporate structure and tax liability and all this other stuff is going to be involved in doing that? It was like, oh, it's my gift of my humanity in this larger spiritual context. So I think that's where they all relate, is that we can feel accompanied on our journey and never as lonely as I think people feel when they're lacking that sense of being a part of a larger cosmic context. I know for me, I feel much less afraid and much less lonely because I feel accompanied on the path. So, Michael, that's my answer to your question and what we put out in our infographic. And if Foster, I don't know if you have something else to say about that before we go on to the next.
No, I think that says it beautifully. And thank you, Helen and Ramaji, for making our event today part of your journey.
Thank you so very much.
A quick request to Ramaji and Helen. If you don't mind, could you drop in your contact information? Some people have asked. They wanted to see that, a website or your contact information, and also the book title that Foster read.
I put the book title into chat.
Great. Thanks, Foster.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, we'll do that.
Thanks so
okay.
much.
Okay.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Let's bring in the next person who has their hand raised, Kimberly.
Okay. And then also we have a question from Stephen who we can pull up. So hand raising, Melissa had her hand raised for a long time.
Okay, Melissa, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes. And can we? Can you put on your camera?
I thought I. Okay. share my video. I guess that's it.
Yes.
That is it.
Okay.
Hey.
So it's hard to know what story to tell, but maybe I'll tell you about my New Zealand story since we just had people do that. Let's see. I was listening to the radio from Santa Cruz, actually, going to another town for some work. And I never listened to the radio. I usually have CDs on. So they announced a contest to win a trip to New Zealand. So I kind of made a note of it, and I called in, and I forgot all about it. 2 weeks later, they called and said, you know, you have to call in right now. Actually, there's a stranger calling in. I could go on with all of the coincidences of that, but needless to say, I won a trip to New Zealand for the Millennium. And it was for the World's Cup. And I thought, well, I want to go on the Millennium because that's when all the excitement will happen, considering that's where, quote, time starts on the Earth. I'm part of the World Parliament of Religions, and I only had money for one trip, and that was the year that it was in South Africa. So I decided I would go to New Zealand. And I said to Spirit, I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go to New Zealand. The next day in the mail, I received a check for the registration, my plane fare, all of my stuff for the Parliament. So I went to the Parliament. In fact, I went to the Parliament, came home to San Francisco, had one day and flew to New Zealand. I don't recommend that trip. But while I was in New Zealand, I stayed at the University of Cape Town, and Cape Town had a dorm, and that's where we ate. And I met someone there who said, oh, you're going to New Zealand. Have you ever been to Tahara? And I said, no, but I'm really looking for context because I love to visit people as opposed to places. And so when I got to New Zealand, a friend of a friend had said, please stay with her. And we were talking over dinner, and I said, have you ever heard of this place called Tahara? And she looked at me really strangely, and she said, you do spiritual work, right? And I said, yes. She goes, you lead ritual. I said, yes. And she was on the board of Tahara, and the person who was leading their millennium ritual had just dropped out. And I ended up leading the Millennium Ritual in New Zealand. All of that had come from a deep-centered practice where I was looking for guidance. And I find it so weird that I had to win a trip to New Zealand, end up going to South Africa to find out about New Zealand, come back to New Zealand, meet someone who could put me in the place where from there I have been doing nothing but leading ritual and teaching what ritual can do for business all over the world.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. So Denise, we have Denise and Melissa in whichever order is.
That was Melissa.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Right.
Then Denise.
Denise up next. You bet. Denise, can you hear us? And go ahead and click on your camera.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can hear you. We can't see you yet.
Okay. I'm activating the camera. There we are.
There she is.
Can you see me now?
Yeah.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity. I have heard a couple of things that resonate very, very clearly
Kimberly, some of the things that you said about grace and being upheld. And I'm sorry, is it Helen? I believe it was Helen said something about time. And one thing that I want to, before I say what my little story is, one thing that I've noticed and would like to point out is a common thread that I'd like for people to observe, that when some of these experiences are taking place, there's a great deal of friction prior to that. There's a sense of uncertainty. And what the reason I want to point this out is for those who perhaps haven't encountered their spiritual experience just yet, is to notice that many a times this type of friction is almost a requirement. It's a prelude to the experiential of that sense of spirituality and connection. So just a little tidbit of out there, to notice when those opportunities do come about. As for my experience, I've had many. But one that recently got documented, as a matter of fact, by someone who's right here and listening with us, Stephen Empson, he asked me to share with him about my Kundalini, which I had back in 2001. And he recorded me and has loaded that up onto his YouTube channel. So anybody who wants to look at it in more detail, I don't want to take too much time. But that was an experience that brought me to an understanding, Foster, very similar to what you have said, that I am one in the same spirit. It was a realization that there was no separateness. It is an experience because it's so intense. It's very difficult to articulate into language because it's very physical, very. I don't know how to even put words to it. So the only way to articulate it is through sensation, which is what I did in the video. But what came out of it was this, the actual words that came out of my mouth at the moment was, I am the fire and the fire is in me. And it was this really deep understanding that I am spirit, like you have said, Foster. Out of that, later on, I was able to put in context or to put in words the definition of love, which that's why I mentioned you, Kimberly, because of the words that you've said. And the way that I have languaged love, the definition that I've given is love is the essence by which all things are suspended by grace. The word that you used was being beheld. To me, I compare that to being suspended, to being just elevated. Helen mentioned the separation of time, that you feel no time. And to me, that is what suspension is all about. It's a point at which you are kind of dangling in midair and have absolutely no sense of time, time space of who you are, what you are, other than you're just there, your spirit. So that's my share.
Thank you, Denise. While we have you on, Denise has for those of you who don't know her, she has a fabulous radio show. Denise, could you say what your radio show is called and where people can find it?
Actually, it's not so much a radio show. It is a YouTube channel, which I share on YouTube. I interview people such as yourself. And share those interviews on YouTube. I do write for the Huffington Post, and those columns could be found under my name, Denise Wilbanks, Huffington Post. And I mostly focus on the philosophy of the law of one. That's just what I have found that works for me. That doesn't mean that, but then so I expand on those matters.
Right. Maybe you could drop before, that link into the chat.
Absolutely. One thing I do want to say before I leave, the appreciation that I have for what you're doing here, I have found people to collaborate with because of my relationship through the threads of this discussion and so forth that have been extremely, extremely helpful in personal development. And
when you said earlier, what is a spiritual experience? Well, I want to remind people that a spiritual experience doesn't necessarily constitute this wonderful big awe, that it could simply be as much as, hey, having a conversation like we're having right now with other human beings, and that in and of itself can expand your understanding. So don't discard those little moments of connection.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Denise. And
my pleasure.
Denise, I'm inspired by your share to share a personal story as well, particularly because when you said that, just to remind people that a spiritual experience can be have a prelude of friction and of uncertainty. And so one of the most clarifying events of my life was when, this was back in, I think, 1984, when I was at the Monroe Institute for a week. And on the last night, I'd been having a wonderful week and using the HemiSync technology, and they've got wonderful trainers there. And I'd been having lots of kind of beyond the body adventures and so forth. But around the dinner table on our last night, some of the trainers were kind of teasing the students and calling us tape junkies, because the HemiSync technology is a binaural technology that comes through at that time using tapes, where you get different frequencies in each ear, and it creates a standing wave between the hemispheres of the brain that tends to facilitate your getting into that particular frequency range of alpha or theta or delta. And so when they teased us like that, it really hit me, and I all of a sudden went into this period of just total doubt, thinking, oh my God, maybe I am a tape junkie. I'm just addicted to this technology, and I'm making all this stuff up in my mind and all this stuff. So everyone else ended up going to sleep, and I'm just there in kind of a dark night of the soul questioning it all. So I said, okay, well, I'm just going to, it's time to ask. And so I went into my little soundproof, lightproof bedroom that they have there, and laid down with no tapes, no technology, and said, okay, I'm just going to see whether I'm a tape junkie or not. So I just did the kind of induction process that they had taught us to do. And within moments, with no technological help, I was in actually probably the deepest energy state of my life. Just these waves of energy were just flowing back and forth between my head and my feet. And it was just absolutely ecstatic. But then I enjoyed it for a while. I was getting stronger and stronger. But I'm a real kind of a so what type of guy. So I think, okay, this is great, but so what? You know, what can I use this energy state for? So the first thing that occurred to me was, okay, I can use it to check out. There've been a lot of discussion about guardian angels and higher selves and all that kind of stuff. And I was open, but I was skeptical about it. I'd never had any direct experience. So the first thing I did in that state was just ask the universe, okay, if this guardian angel thing is real, if I have some sort of entities that are looking out for me, could you just give me some kind of sign? And within seconds, there was this egg-shaped light being on either side of my bed, emanating such warmth into me that tears just started streaming down my face. And and I've still got my eyes closed, so I'm not saying that they were there to my physical eyes, but their presence was so profoundly impactful for me that I remember saying to them, thank you, I will never have to ask again. So, and I've been in relationship with those entities ever since. But there was one more step to the story, which was then I was lying there with that kind of spiritual confidence that, okay, well, what can I still use this for? So I asked the universe and asked my guides. I said, could you help me clarify my purpose in life? And at that point, in my mind's eye, in my being, I'm sitting in meditation in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, which has always been a source of fascination for me. And this waves of energy that I was feeling start to spiral, and it rises up my spine, goes right out the top of my head. And in my mind's eye, the top of the pyramid is opening, and my spirit goes shooting out into the cosmos. And all of a sudden, I'm out there looking around at stars and this infinite darkness and so forth. And I kind of turn around and look, and I'm looking down at the blue marble, and I'm looking down at Earth. And I think, well, this is kind of a strange answer to my question about purpose. It's fun, but what does it mean? At that point, I hear this sound, this kind of whooshing sound getting louder and louder behind me. And all of a sudden, my body was just filled with this column of light that went through me, came through my body, and then went down to the Earth. And I saw it connecting into a grid to other beings all over the planet. And the message that I got was, this is your purpose. It didn't come in words, but when I went to put words onto it later on, that it was some version like, my purpose is to live as much as possible in alignment with the light. It's to thrive in life and then to share that, whatever I learn, with whoever is interested. So I just wanted to share that because it's shaped everything that I've done since, including the movie that we all made here at Thrive. And it was preceded by exactly that moment of friction and uncertainty that you talked about. So don't shut those off. You know, I invite people to go into it.
Thank you, Pastor, and thank you, Denise. You know, I think the thing friction, I think that's actually one of the reasons that drug and alcohol addiction is so defeating, is because it can numb that discomfort, which is like, you know, when we talked about my, you know, I was in a lot of anxiety when I prayed for a sign that first time there with regard to having the kids come up to me. And it's been true also, like after Thrive, and you know, there are times when it feels like, you know, we're in deep and big on some of this stuff, and working with these new technologies and exposing things, obviously it has some risk involved. And I think where spirituality and activism come together in this sense of belonging, and that my soul is primary and my human experience is serving that evolution. When I said it has to do with courage, I think that it really has a lot to do with what we believe about what our human lives are and what we're doing here, and how that relates has a lot to do with how bold we are able to be. Because I know, like, I really want to be alive here. I love it. I don't feel done at all. And also, I know that part of that wanting to be alive is that I want to be fully alive. I don't want to miss out on this because I was afraid of what other people would think, or because something might happen that I don't want to have happen. I would rather just really be fully engaged. And part of that is that sense of belonging that comes from having a spiritual orientation be the cradle of my daily actions. And I've talked a lot about having our daily actions be aligned with our personal intentions and with this larger sense of things. And I really think that's where the daily practice meets the peak experience, meets the sense of who we are and what we're doing here, and how that actually just plays out in a day-to-day way. And I know for me, you know, being aware of my purpose and having the spiritual orientation, I just feel so profoundly grateful. And I think that it requires allowing ourselves again and again to dive into that discomfort when we feel it, because it is going to be something that informs and motivates us to both receive and then listen more humbly to that which is shown.
Thanks, Kimberly. Let's bring in the next hand raise.
Well, yeah, we had somebody, let's see, go. Is it Bill?
Yes, Bill Wise.
Bill Wise.
Bill, can you hear us?
I have to ask you, Bill, was that last name your given name, or did you just earn it?
It doesn't sound like we're getting any audio feed from Bill, unfortunately.
He's responding non-verbally.
Okay, well, maybe we go to Borsch, is it, and then come back to Bill.
Okay.
And Richard after that.
Borsch, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Have you got a camera?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Am I on?
Yes.
Ever since I was young, I wanted more of spirit. I was brought up in a very strong evangelical tradition, but I felt uncomfortable a lot of the time, like it was just, there was no presence there. And I went on to seminary and tried to work in a church and was just too happy. I was just too positive. And my friend said, "You're ruining the franchise. You're not taking the names. You're not playing the games. Why don't you leave?" And I just was the kid that always asked the questions that just created a lot of consternation. And so in 1982, I had an experience that it was the end of the world. The world was on fire, and I had to leave everything. And within days, more than $10 million worth of business went away, and I was sleeping on the street.
Wow.
And then for the next many years, I traveled around the world and met with heads of state and just did stuff. But every moment I felt it was like it was the end. I was going to die. I felt like I was driving my car 60 miles an hour, and all I could see was the halfway through the front of the hood. I was hoping I wouldn't hit anything. And then I realized that this was normal. It needed to get me out of my orientation, my perception of religion and all the ideas and thoughts and feelings I had. And that vulnerability was the biggest thing. I had to accept vulnerability, and I didn't want to. I sometimes wanted to move into the green meadow, into the surety. I'd read Joseph Campbell, and Joseph Campbell would say, "If you see your life's steps laid out in purpose, it's not your life, it's somebody else. If you're falling, dive." And I was continually throwing my heart over the chasm and diving after it. And many times having my hand on the doorpost and door handle saying, "Okay, I guess I'll go sleep at the airport or on the street or something, and there'd be somebody on the other side of the door." And it never ceased to just fill me with awe and humility how never once was I left down. And I guess just the point I wanted to make was that vulnerability is so important. Just accept dying. So what? I'm going to die. And you don't. And accept it 10 times a day. You don't. And after a while, the dying part gets old. You don't, you know, you're going to Europe tomorrow. You're meeting with governments. Yeah, but I don't have a ticket. I don't have a place to live. I don't have a credit card. And I can't, you know, get in touch with anybody because I can't revive my cell phone. I can't pay for it. And even though I have the money, they won't take my money. And it never mattered. And I started playing this game. It's Monday morning, 6:30. I'm on the plane. Everything's okay. And then I just work on it both sides. And I'd find 6:30. I don't know how I got there. I'm on the plane. Everything's okay. And that game of playing it from both sides just became fun. Another impossible situation. I go, okay, I've seen this before. It's all going to work out. And the vulnerability, I call it blessed bewilderment, has been when I resist it, it doesn't move forward. When I just say, "Oh, so what, you know, I'll die," all of a sudden I'm sitting with the head of state. I had one meeting where we were in a business transaction. I learned how money was made and where it comes from. And we'd have people sitting beside me and saying, "What do you do?" And I said, "Oh, just over in Europe talking to some banks." And they said, "Well, let me introduce myself. I write textbooks. I'm a dean for this. I'm in this major think tank that I head up. I'm the head of the Jewish Council for the country. I've rewritten the tax structure for 45 countries. What do you do?" I said, "Well, a little bit." "You do? I've never met a person like you before." I go, "Well, I'm nobody special." It's just where money comes from is not where people believe. And you can have any amount of want you want it. You just got to sell your soul. And I come home, and I guess that was a real conversation all the way over the Atlantic. And I drove the man home. And then later when I contacted him, he just ran the other way. It was just too much. And so just learning to live in the moment that everything is okay, and that spirit is so far beyond anything we can imagine in its grace and its elegance and its beauty. One time I had an entire book given to me. I was told it was coming. And I met two people. They wrote the book. He kept on falling asleep at the computer and hitting the finger. And then he said, oh, nothing came. And then we realized this is 325 paragraphs, so 332, whatever it was, a most beautiful, elegant truth. It was just like Morse code all in once. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to live in the moment and not sweat the small stuff.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
And be vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's it.
That really is one of the themes is the openness to really hear and recognize our part of things is through that vulnerability. And, you know, and one thing I wanted to say, I know we have so many topics that we cover. You know, our next one's on how to stay out of harm's way with regard to the whole EMF raise. And, you know, how does that relate? I see these as all really connected because when we bring our humanness into our spiritual practice and we recognize that we're partners here, then our earthly understanding of what's going on, how it works, and how we can contribute to the solutions becomes one with our spiritual practice, and rather than it being fear-based or whatever, it's simply, it's like bringing our personalities and our skill sets and our learning to what it is to help bring about the life that we all envision and know is possible. So I just wanted to say, to me, that's how it is, and I think the thing that we run into most of all in the conversations is when people are concerned about that getting informed about what's going wrong is going to somehow keep their attention on what's negative rather than the more, you know, glorious considerations of what we know is possible and what it feels like when we're just really feeling one with all that is elegant and gracious and true. And I think that that separation is an illusion. I think that, in fact, being informed is what allows us to be the greatest instruments of bringing light, and that it's not a matter of being afraid. It's a matter of understanding the problem so that we can do the best job imaginable of coming up with the solutions. And that's really what, you know, the whole Thrive movement's about. It's what we're doing, I guess it's September 12th with the EMF, that's what we're doing there. It's always within the context, and it's never separate from the spiritual context that motivates and holds all that is our work and the Thrive movement. So I just wanted to mention.
Yeah, for that event, we'll have Jeremy Johnson, a good friend of ours, a real expert in EMF, and someone who speaks from his personal experience as well as his scientific knowledge, because he experienced severe EMF damage and has to be very careful where he goes. So he's like a kind of a canary in the coal mine for the rest of us. And fortunately, he's taken that experience and turned it into tremendous knowledge. And he goes around the world helping people clean up the EMF pollution in their personal environments and how to avoid it when you're traveling and with cell phones and all that type of thing.
And I think that's where health comes in too, also, like to just be the healthiest instrument possible that we can be. Francis, do you have another poll?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Borja brought up the topic of not being afraid of death. And I think it's a good lead into our next poll. So, Go, if you could bring that up. And, well, yeah, there it is. So this poll is, what do you think happens to an individual human's consciousness after the death of the body? So A is it ceases to exist in any form. B is the consciousness returns to its source as part of the larger collective consciousness without its own individual identity. see it continues evolving in any number of non-physical planes of existence. Or D, it leaves the body and in many instances will be reincarnated into another body. And finally, E is other. You know, if you have a scenario that involves, hellfire and damnation or something like that, you can put that as E. So click on whichever one of those or multiple ones that are relevant for you and then hit submit. While people are doing that, I'd just like to expound a little bit on what Borje was saying also about that vulnerability. And I don't want anybody to be left with a misunderstanding. I don't think he was saying, you can just sit on your couch and be transported to the airport with a ticket and money and all of that. You know, the Sufis have an expression, have faith in Allah and tie your camel to the post. I think it makes a lot of sense to in our spiritual path to see how well we can take care of 3D reality while remaining vulnerable and having the trust in the larger scenario. I think depending on the trust in the cosmos alone will get you very quick lessons that you also need to do your part. Kimberly and I each have an article in the last month's online edition of the Law of Attraction magazine where we attempt to expound on this both practically and scientifically about how the insights tend to occur to the prepared mind. And we have to actually get up off the couch to make our dreams come true. And at the same time, the level of support that engenders from the cosmos tends to defy the extent of the rational mind. Okay, the results are up. If you're looking at the results, you can grab one of the divider lines in the gray row where it says questions, and then just pull that to the right, and you'll be able to see more. So nobody on the call thinks that consciousness ceases to exist at the time of death. 22% say it returns to its source, but without individuality. 58% continues evolving in any number of non-physical realms. 47% leaves the body, and in many instances will be reincarnated into another body. No answer, 22, other 6%, and no answer, again, those are probably the people who are on mobile devices. So thank you for your input. I don't probably sense a whole lot of fear of death in this group from the poll responses. I mean, none of us, I don't think, are looking forward to any type of suffering in the dying process, but I think there's a large population in the Thrive Network who have just explored all of this enough to have a sense that who we are in our essence is non-physical. And I actually want to take a moment to validate that a little bit because one of the things that we also said that today's event would look into is where does science meet spirituality? And that's been a lot of my path, is bringing those two together, and it's been very satisfying and liberating. So I want to bring in a little science here. I ran a company in Silicon Valley that I founded for 8 years called the Mind Center, where we had developed and were dispersing and then using for training the state-of-the-art in brainwave biofeedback technology. And there was no induction technology, but simply feedback. And if people were having very profound experiences, it was an intensive training. They came for stress reduction, they came for meditation enhancement, they came for creativity enhancement. People had very profound experiences as they went deeper and deeper just with feedback that made it efficient as to what the actual vibrations in four quadrants of their brain were. We also did a lot of studies with yogis and Zen masters and Qigong masters, as well as psychics and mystics. And so I got to see that, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of hoaxers out there, but there's a lot of people who are really good at what they do, even if you can't necessarily prove it physically. So we had the opportunity to get some physical evidence, particularly on some of these yogis and psychics. I'll give you an example. There was one psychic that we worked with, a famous woman in America named Ann Armstrong. And she was just a very down-to-earth, you know, loving, caring woman. She came in and we started monitoring. We asked her to go into the different states that she did healing, states that she did remote medical diagnosis, states that she did telepathy, states that she did, you know, just deep insight or time travel and so forth. And as she went into each one of these states, we watched on the polygraph where her brain coherence, you know, the synchrony between hemispheres of the brain, front and back and side to side, as well as the frequencies, as well as the amplitudes of her brain waves, would just change, like you and I would change a TV with a remote. She would change her entire brainwave state. And then she would change it to another one. Sometimes we'd ask her to see if we could trick her. We'd ask her to go back to one of the original ones. It would go back to the same characteristics every time. And then in one of her states, she was in deep delta, which is between 0 and 4 cycles per second, where virtually all the population is asleep and not dreaming. And she was awake talking to us, saying, well, this is one of the more deep states from which I do certain types of telepathic healing and so forth. We were just, you know, completely mind blown. And, that's enough. There's no time for other stories on that one now, but I wanted to also go on to, when we were at the Monroe Institute, Kimberly's also studied there, we got to see the biomeasuring, the biomonitoring output as people that they call the explorers. They've always had a team of explorers of at least, you know, 30 people who have gotten very adept at the beyond the body experience. In the beginning, they just get good at going out, having these experiences and coming back and remembering it. And it's very clear that most of these experiences take place in deep theta, which is also where most of the yogis and Zen masters are going, or in kind of upper delta. But then there, as people get really good at being an explorer, then they go out and they're able to actually describe into a microphone where they're going, you know, how they're navigating, who they're meeting, what's going on in these different realms. And they can speak about it without losing the state, which is a very subtle skill. And then very often, as they would get super adept, they would go out and they would start meeting advanced entities, interdimensional beings, who would offer or invite them to actually share their vocal cords. And these entities would start to speak through with just amazing knowledge and cosmologies and how the whole octaves of consciousness works and the history of consciousness on planet, just, you know, profound stuff without, you know, looking at a single note or without having to check in a book or something like that. And we got to see that when someone tuned their body to the right state, there not only would the frequencies be there, but the whole body polarity, the north-south polarity of the torus would switch. In other words, they would move out to the torus beyond their physicalness, and it would, you could see in the magnetic readings in their crown chakras and at the base of their spine or at their feet, it would switch entirely. So we got to see the coherence in scientific measurement that validated that these people are doing something extraordinary and they're doing something consistent. And then you just have to match that up with the meaning of what they're describing and reporting to see that, okay, there's a lesson in here for all of us. And that's been my interest, you know, from the beginning. I spent a couple of years going around the country seeking out the best psychics that I could find and then just asking them, how do you do what you do? And then how do the rest of us learn that and avoid the health issues that often come if people spend too much time out of their body and that type of thing. So that's as much as I can go into for now. We're starting to run out of time, but I just wanted to really validate at least the possibility for people of altered states of consciousness, interdimensional experience, so that it can nurture your critical thinking, but also your open-mindedness. So you can develop the skill of discernment when you're talking to someone telling a story that they can't necessarily prove or you haven't necessarily experienced yourself, I encourage you to keep an open mind to it and then go about validating it yourself. And if it's something that's of interest to you, then learn the skills, because that's the evolution that we're all involved in. It's not obligatory. It's an opportunity for each of us. And that's where the free will comes in.
So Foster, thank you. We just have a few minutes, and Goa had something to share, and there was a really good question from Stephen Amston also, and Spirit Andrews had something, so I know we're running out of time, but Goa, why don't you say what you had to say, and if we have time for this question, I'd like to ask it also.
Sure, thank you, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. I talked a little bit about creativity and the relationship with spirituality before. So this kind of dovetails with that, but it also speaks to a practical aspect of bringing spirituality into, you know, trying to bring it into all aspects of someone's life. And this, personally speaking to the experience of actually creating the visual effects for Thrive. And me and my team actually developed and got into a regular practice of centering and, you know, grounding and kind of getting into that flow state before we actually began production. And the impact was a couple of things. One, it sort of, you know, it shows the connection of, you know, the flow state, which we've all sort of been in that. If you're a musician or an artist of any type, you've, or even a runner, you kind of experience that flow state, which I think is a spiritual experience as well. But when you're in that state, as we've kind of mentioned before, time and space and those boundaries dissolve. And what I think is interesting there, and I can speak to specifically with production of Thrive and how creating some of these visuals, is that when you're actually doing work in a beyond space and time thing, you can pull sometimes years worth of work in an hour. And I really saw that happen in a multiple, you know, many instances. So I wanted to bring that up, you know, sort of, you know, when you integrate this part of your life, some of these constraints sort of go away, and it becomes a very interesting experience, and can be very, you know, expanding. So
yeah, thank you. That's a great reminder.
It's so deeply satisfying when Foster and I, putting together Thrive Connect, one of the meetings that we had with people that could really play an important part in bringing this to fruition, we felt like we were in slow motion and couldn't tell, like, has this already happened or is it just happening? It was the weirdest sort of destiny feel that we were on this path that was so much bigger than us. And we were each having that experience separately. Anyway.
Well, just saying, let me just tack on to that. What, really briefly, what, I want to acknowledge Kimberly and the production of Thrive. You know, traditionally, movie sets are just, you know, hectic and anxiety-ridden and everybody at each other's throats. And people who worked on the camera, lighting, sound, and so forth with our production said they'd never experienced anything like it. And Kimberly was the producer as well as director. And she would start every day on set by bringing everyone together, doing a little check-in, and then having everyone close their eyes and literally tune together until we were all breathing as one. Then we would open our eyes and go to the set and start the production. And I think that's the kind of resonance that people can feel and Thrive, even if they don't understand it or have an explanation.
Yeah. And I wanted to note before the time is, I guess it is officially up, but August, we're not going to have an event. It's going to be September 12th for the next one. So I encourage everybody to check in, and we're just traveling a lot in August and it got too hectic. So we're going to have, I think we have two in September. We have two somewhere coming. I think it is in September, but the first one's going to be September 12th with Jeremy Johnson. And I really hope you'll join us for that, because it's just another way to keep these glorious human bodies healthy as we move toward being able to manifest our purpose in courageous and expansive ways. So we have, I guess it's time to go.
No, let's go ahead. Bring on another one or two. Just speak real quick.
Okay, so Stephen Amston, I thought it was a really interesting question. If you can come on and about, is the false notion of original sin at the root of all deception regarding our individual power and authority? And I think that's so relevant, actually. And then Spiri had a comment, too. So maybe if each of you...
Stephen, unfortunately, can't be promoted as a panelist. He's on a device that can't do that. So we can just answer his question verbally, and then I'll bring Spiri up.
Okay, great.
it's a really profound question, and I happened to hear a more profound answer to that than I would come up with yesterday from Helen. If you could bring Helen back in quickly, I would love for people to have a chance to just hear her perspective on where this whole notion of the fall from grace and original sin and the whole Luciferian perspective came from. Not to say that this is any final answer, but I found it very helpful for me.
I want to repeat the question because it's just helpful in this notion of, are people capable of being informed and empowered and connected to all that is cosmically and in terms of power structure. So the question is, the false notion of original sin at the root of all deception regarding our individual power and authority. And I just think, you know, one thing I said to Foster recently is that it's always funny for me when I'm with people who don't believe they can change the world, because I believe I can. Like, that, who else? Like, the people who are creating what's wrong are just people creating it. So we're people who can create the solutions to that. And so that understanding of our own power and our own authority is really core to how we operate on the planet. So I appreciate the question. So Helen.
That is such a key question. I'm so glad that you asked it. We have been experiencing for 12,000 years now, a particular core wound, which some people have called original sin, but that terminology is very loaded, you know, the idea of sin. Ramaji and I have journeyed really, really deeply into the planetary history, both inside ourselves and in the collective field, and really explored this at a very, very visceral and deep level. What we've experienced is that in the universe, there was a wound or a fracture created at the time free will was first encoded. And because all the codes in the universe are carried by archangels and angels and brought into manifestation through angelic process, there was way, way back, eons ago, at the time free will was encoded into the universe, an angelic process involved. And on Earth, we've given a name to the key angel involved in that process, the name Lucifer. And again, that's a name that has a lot of sort of loaded connotations with it. So just putting all of that aside for a while and just looking at this archetypally and cosmologically, perhaps in the way that Joseph Campbell might have looked at it, you can enter the story and perceive Lucifer not as an evil being, as sinful, but as an experiment in free will, an experiment in the downloading of free will codes. In our deep journey into the history of Lucifer, what Ramaji and I experienced was Lucifer's trauma, the feeling of being abandoned by God during the process of individualization, terror, anger, and all those reactions that come from that state of being, but feeling betrayed, then feeling arrogant in reaction and response to that, and a huge gathering of energy astrally and mentally around that core belief. And over eons of time, that problem just got worse and worse. That individualization was accompanied by this possibility of fear and misinterpretation of the core intention of the presence in the creation of free will at all. Because prior to that, beings didn't have what we understand as free will. They existed much in the way angels do, in that they had a holographic shared awareness, a feeling of being part of everything, a feeling of being part of the totality with no disconnect. It was a very strong place with no vulnerability.
And the process of individualization created a huge vulnerability in all the beings involved. And part of that, the potential in that was the experience of fear and disconnection, the experience of disassociation. So about 12,000 years ago, it was decided that the planet Earth, because it was so strong in innocence and purity and love, that it would be a healing sanctuary for that energy, for that core wound, for that seed wound. Our challenge was that we, at that point, were not grounded enough in our love to be able to face that much terror, anger, and disconnection. And the whole planet was thrown into terror, anger, and disconnection. And we've been living in that ever since. So, you know, in some traditions, they call that original sin or the fall from grace or being exiled from the Garden of Eden. And the important thing to recognize now is that all seed codes can be healed. It's inevitable that they be healed, and that it's time for that seed code to be healed now in all of us who live on planet Earth and in the planet itself. All the angelic realms that have become part of that process, all the interdimensional realms that are part of that experience, as well as the human realms and the soul and the logos of the planet. So we're entering a really, really powerful time now where things that we have taken for granted as the foundation of our reality, which have their roots in that seed trauma, they will cease to exist. So we're going to experience the healed Taurus, the healed Vector equilibrium, both in ourselves and in the planet again, and that process of restoration is beginning now. So I really want to thank you, Foster and Kimberly and Goa, and all the Thrive team, for together with Nassim, actually, for bringing forth the understanding of the Taurus and the Vector equilibrium, because it is the key understanding of this time. And without it, we wouldn't really have the tools we need to move forward in our healing process. And with it, we have the symbol that we need. We have the hope and the inspiration that we need, and we also have the tools that we need to restore wholeness to both human consciousness and to the field of the planet itself.
Well, I think that's a beautiful note to end this discussion on, because we need to wrap up, even though we still have a lot of hands raised. I knew we wouldn't wrap completely around this topic, but in my research into the whole global domination agenda and the Illuminati and so forth, I haven't found a single person or agenda, no matter how nasty it was, who didn't have a justification. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to realize that even people who are doing very evil acts have some sort of context that they're justifying in, and that's ultimately what needs to be healed, because that meme, it's in the field and it's passed on through abuse and neglect, you know, generation to generation. But I entirely agree with you, Helen, about the dynamic that's going on the planet right now, and how this planet, I don't know what's going on other planets, but this planet definitely has the possibility of healing that one for the entire cosmos. And I'm thrilled that we all on this call get to be a part of that.
I wanted to say one thing about the Thrive movement in that, Foster, because I think this notion that of original sin, as Stephen was talking about and as you addressed Helen, is like our belief that people are capable of immense creativity and resilience and brilliance is what motivates me to drive through LA traffic to figure out the tax ramifications of unleashing the technologies that will allow people to be released from the distraction of survival, because that's what is keeping it at bay. It's, you know, this notion that we're not capable of it is just a false understanding that people are being actually kept away from it. And so our work is motivated to accompany this energetic healing and to participate in it. And that's really where the Thrive Movement is. That's the context in which we're doing what we're doing. So I love this conversation. Spiri, I'm sorry we didn't get to you and to the other people whose hands are raised, but we will engage with you again in September. Thank you. And the conversation can carry on the event page from this. So thank you to everybody for participating. We'll see you September 12th, and we'll continue to have our blogs on the weekends. And
So Goa, why don't you unmute everyone for a little goodbye. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Goodbye,
bye,
everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. Thank you. Can you hear me? Any blessings?
Blessings to you too.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any blessings?
Thank you.
James.
Lots and prayers are with you.
Blessings.
All the love there is.
Thank you.
Okay, go. Let's have our debrief once you close the mic.
I'm in love with you all.
Thank you all. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. 41.
And my office, sir.